Welcome to the Cold World Podcast. Thank y'all for joining me.
That's what's up.
I had a few things that I wanted to talk about. Let me go in here real quick. Had a few things that I wanted to talk about. I just get to do some really cool stuff for work, and I got to talk to these parents yesterday. I want to go through that experience because I think that, one, folks that's watching this and that's listening to this can get a lot from it, just around education. And then, two, I want to talk about, as we talk about education and the role that we expect our schools to play and all that good stuff, we're dealing with poverty and all that crap. Like, there are other players that we need to be putting that pressure on, too. So, putting pressures on systems and schools is dope. But I'm talking about the Black church, which I grew up in, have a lot of respect for, and working on an article about that right now. But first off, I want to talk about Facebook Live and how much I love this platform. And let me say why. You have so much access to things. Like I said, I've said this before. You can find and do so much stuff with these little bitty devices, man. There are so many young people out there that are smart, that have something to say, that are creating content and products, and it's never been easier to do that. Now, you can use Facebook Live to live stream some party or talk some BS or some mess or whatever. You can also use it to spread some type of information, some type of knowledge. So for the young people that's listening to me that have asked me how did I get into speaking and things like that and how did that work out for me, I gave a lot of speeches. I did a lot of talking. But I had to go places to do those things. I had to get put on bills to do those things. I had to start in churches and have those conversations with people to build up that muscle and to build up that skill set. Facebook Live, you can do that. You can practice every day. Like, you can come on there and the thing that you care about, you can refine your craft daily. The same way if you write, you can write and publish stuff for free easily. I the only reason I start with that is because I get a lot of questions after these of folks that like the things that I do, or they think they like the things that I do. You only get to see the speeches. You don't get to see all the stuff that goes behind that. But working on that craft and just trying to be genuine, figuring out what your message is. What is it that you want to talk to people about? What is it that you care about? And then learn more about that stuff and document as you learn. That's all I do, is just document my experiences. So as I talk about that, I want to go into this conversation I had with a group of parents last night. So my whole life is around supporting kids in education and just supporting my community. And one of the ways I do that is I try to give parents the tools, all parents that look like whatever, but especially parents that resemble mine, right? I want to give people in our community the tools that they need in order to be successful. And that looks a lot of different ways, but I've done like four events this week, and I talked to these parents last night, and I saw something that really touched my heart. There were three fathers in the room. Now, this is important for a few reasons. I've been doing work in our community my entire professional life as a social worker, working with all these things for over 10 years. And there are never black fathers. Let me change that. There are hardly ever black fathers in the room. Usually the only men that are in the room are folks that are paid to be there. And that's disturbing. And the reason why is I need black men to understand that, one, black men on a school campus turns into a rock star, man. Like, you are, like, just the presence and the way that you can command space. And this is, I want to say this in adoration of our women that have just held us and have done an amazing job of doing that. Like, we put so much pressure on women, and they have just been carrying us and carrying us and carrying us and carrying our children and carrying our communities and carrying our churches. Like, that just needs to be acknowledged, because it's true. It's true. You see them so much that you are starting to forget the magic that they are bringing to those spaces and the way that they are propping us up, especially in struggling communities. Because I was in a room last night with some amazing female leaders that were teachers, that were parent organizers, that were parents that have just been there grinding it out, putting in the work, being abused, being mistreated, being unseen, being forgotten. And so I want to start by saying that, and really, we got to do better by our women, especially the women that are holding us up in our communities. Back to our black men. So when I saw these three black men last night in this meeting, I got really excited. And just their presence, like, captures a room. And so, like, when I walk on a school campus, any school campus across this country for the most part, the level of respect and reverence that I get from kids is amazing. Like, it's just an amazing feeling. Like, when I publish this article, I'm just going to post some of the pictures. I love spending time in classrooms with kids. I love spending time in hospitals with kids. I love spending time in churches with kids, because they are so not used to seeing black folks that talk like them, that look like them, and that's in that space with them. So in this conversation last night, I wanted to really push that and wanted to push us and put a challenge on us and say, how do we get more men in this space so these women don't have to do all the stuff they got to do? You know what I'm saying? I don't like seeing women have to jump in between fights and break up fights. Like, that's us failing them. And I'm not on some patriarchy stuff and all that. I mean, we can go deeper into that and that stuff, but I want to be simple tonight. Like, we just got to do better. And so what I'm hoping is, I hope to see, like, we have schools that be off the hook, like folks be acting a certain type of way. I promise you, if it was a team, 10, 15 men that was about their business, that was walking in these classrooms and spending time in these places and talking to folks and pulling the best out of them, I guarantee you it wouldn't be as crazy as it is. I just know it. I just know it. And so what I talked to these parents about last night was, you know, there are so many bigger overarching things that tends to get our attention. And I wanted to drill down. I wanted to drill down just into how well or how not so well we were educating folks. And so I showed us our scores and how we were performing. And I don't care how you feel about testing. This is not what this is about. Being last in anything isn't a good feeling. It is not a good feeling. I am so tired of seeing, when I look at statistics and I see the lowest of on good things is always black folks, and the highest on negative things is always black folks. All right. So just to ground in that, I am a student of educational history. I'm a person that has looked in this country at how well we have educated poor black kids for a long time, and it has not been good. It has never been good at scale. What that means is there's always some pockets, there's always a few spaces, but it's never been good at scale. Why am I saying this? As somebody who loves and cares deeply about education and improving it, I am also somebody that is realistic in my mind that I have to do things for myself and for my child in order for them to be successful. And if they are in an amazing school, then that's just a bonus. That's just icing on the cake, right? You know what I mean? Like, if this government doesn't fail them, that's a bonus. But history has shown me, whether it's education, whether it's healthcare, you thinking about Tuskegee or whatever, and I'm not on some conspiracy theory stuff. I'm just looking at stats and facts. Like, the fact that I'm sitting here with you talking right now, right? getting preparing to travel across the country and have a conversation about whatever I'm about to go have a conversation about, statistically, I'm not supposed to be here. Statistically, I'm supposed to be in somebody's ditch. I'm supposed to be robbing somebody or be in somebody's jail. All right? So what I learned really early was that I had to be really aggressive. I try to teach parents how to be aggressive. I try to teach parents how to speak the language that they need to speak to get the things that they need. You know, anger and rage is extremely important, but that anger and rage has to be used in a strategic way to get you to the goals that you want to accomplish. Period. That's just That is just, we just have to graduate to that place. And I try to balance that line, and it's frustrating, and you don't always win, but that stuff is important. The reason why I mentioned the Black church is I want us to continue to push our schools. But let me be very clear with you. Schools are not going to solve poverty. They are not going to end crime in your neighborhood. They can contribute to stopping poverty, and they can contribute to ending crime in your neighborhood. But the apparatus of the school and what the school is built in the capacity that they have to do is not that. I love that teachers, we ask teachers to do so much, and then we want to put the brunt on their shoulders when a teacher can't take down a crack house. That's not how that works. So what we've forgotten, though, is that as a community is responsible for that crime and that poverty. A community as a whole is responsible for eradicating those things. A school is a part of that community, the same way I'm part of that community. That means we all have a role. So if I'm only holding the school accountable and I'm not holding other places accountable, if I'm not holding the liquor store down the street accountable and talking to them and asking them what I need, if I'm not holding the Black church accountable that's in all these neighborhoods where I go and do work at, then we're missing the mark, because it's not putting this all this on one isn't going to help that. So I brought up the Black church. The Black church is a really important place just in Black history. All right. It was the only place during slavery times where Black folks could be together alone without the watchful eye of a slave master. It has been a pillar in communities, a political pillar. It has been the charity of a community. It has done a lot of amazing things. And so now, though, I don't think that we hold the Black church accountable in the same way. The same conversations I hear us having about education every single day, I don't hear those conversations about the Black church. And I know that this is a rough time for the Black church, especially in Oakland, because Black folks are moving away. So what is my solution? I don't want to just be a person that's complaining, because I have a lot of respect for the Black church. I am Christian. It's something that I grew up with. It is something that I believe in. I'm not ashamed or afraid to say that. You know what I mean? But I, when I go to these meetings and I'm talking to these families, the role that the Black church used to play as it relates to education is they used to be the go-between between a school district and a community. They used to be the translator. They used to create a space that all these folks could come together to get the things that they need. They would be the people asking schools to do X, Y, and Z. They would take that rage and that anger and that angst from that community, and they would translate that into something usable for that district, and then it would go vice versa. You see what I'm saying? Like, they would have that relationship. If there's a church that's in that neighborhood, I've paid a bunch of tithes in my life. I've given a lot of offerings. I've put a lot of money going towards building funds. I've been paying them building funds, and I ain't seen nothing change to a building in a long time in many churches. What I'd like to see, now, if the parents that I said this to them last night. These are 20-something parents last night. Amazing people. I loved having a conversation with them. I mean, they were just amazing. They were passionate. And they were on fire. And they were asking all the right questions. And they should. Give me the questions. I have no problem. I love being in those groups. I'm not scared to have conversations with my community. If that same group of 22 parents walked in together, I'm talking about how you seen the scene in Hidden Figures where they all walking down the hallway because they about to come and save the day. If those 22 parents walked into church in the middle of a service and was just like, listen, we need some help. And this is what that help looks like. We need you to help us do X, Y, and Z. We need you to help get us men in our schools. We need you to help make sure our hallways are safe. We need you to help make sure our babies are getting to and from school safely. I'm telling you, man, like, the black people spend more money per capita on charities through their tithes than almost any other group. We are a faithful bunch. And when I say we are a faithful bunch, I'm really saying black women, because black men ain't that in the church. It's a few. And they work and they end up getting in some type of leadership position. If you go into your church and you count the men to female ratio, it's quite low. It's low. So what I'm saying is, if you can take those ties, you can do those things. I think that is, I believe in my faith. I believe that God has blessed me. I truly do. But I don't think that the church is beyond reproach. I don't think that it's something wrong with me saying that. I think that if you got those 25 parents, and I'm not just talking about the Christian church. Those parents need to be walking into these churches and saying, we need help in our schools. They need to be walking into these mosques and saying, we need help in these schools. And, like, that's just something that just needs to happen. I remember when I was growing up in North Oakland, my church was right across the street. Love my church. But every morning when I was on my way to school, there was Muslims out. The Muslim brothers was out on every single corner, making sure I took my butt to school. So every time we tried to stop and we was talking to girls, or we was at the donut shop too long, they was like, nah, keep it moving. Like, you need, class starts in 10 minutes. You will not be late. And you know what I said? I said, yes, sir. Because them was some big brothers with some bow ties on, and I wasn't used to seeing it. You know what I mean? Like, that's just, that's just what it was. But that was people taking responsibility for their community. Now it's just nobody's fault. Now all I see on Facebook is a bunch of complaining about what Trump is going to do. Now all I see is, like, Uncle Tom this and Coon that. Now I see a bunch of Facebook activists gangbanging on a bunch of different people. And I'm not saying I agree or disagree. I don't like Donald Trump either. I understand that. But that don't mean that the work stops. And that don't mean that things wasn't bad yesterday during Obama or during Clinton or during Bush or whomever. It has not been good for poor black folks in this country for a long time. So let's not get brand new right now and act like because we got somebody that we don't like, that we don't have to keep doing work. So for every negative comment about whatever's happening in the world and nationally or whatever, and because people like to take one little thing you say and try to twist it. I know it's a lot of people afraid for good reason. They're afraid they're going to lose their health care. They're afraid about a bunch of different things. You know what I'm saying? I don't want to, like, that is what it is. But I came to have this truthful conversation with you. In actuality, people in this community, right outside from where I live right now, have been struggling, are in a struggle, and will continue to struggle, regardless of who sits in that seat. Facebook has a way of making us all feel real brand new. And so, we can pop our collars and say we not this and we not that, but if it's a school in your neighborhood where it's only 5% proficiency, then I don't think that the collar popping should continue. But I think that there are some things that we can do. And so my plea right now is, it's a simple one. Just check out your school. See what's going on in that area. Every time somebody gets shot here, and it's really sad. And I see a bunch of RIP stuff. And I see he was such a good kid. And I see all these things. And we do that. And we say some stuff like, we praying for you. We might put a few dollars in a GoFundMe. But what active steps are you taking to make sure that don't keep happening? In my hometown of Chicago, 700 plus murders, yo. 700. So when somebody get on me about working on a Saturday or being at the office at midnight or whatever the case is, I'm working to make sure that I'm creating things and supports and just systems and improvement so more kids are not RIP shirts, man. And it still ain't enough. And I could do better. And I'm trying to even get better. But what are we going to do together as a community? You going to put pressure on your local church apparatus? In that liquor store that's down the street from that school? Are you going to ask them to do something to come help? Are you going to spend some time there? It ain't hard to do. There are four things that go into education that we forgot. We only talk about the schoolhouse now. But the schoolhouse is not why I'm successful. It's not. Actually, it had an adverse effect. Right? It's mentorship. We're the mentors. Who is teaching our young folks what they should and should not do? I remember being in living with my grandmother, and somebody saw me cussing outside, and they snatched me up, and they took me to my grandmother, and this is in Kentucky, and they told my grandma what I did, and she looked at them, and she said, well, did you beat his ass? Now, I know that might be, you know, something really different for folks that's hearing that. And I'm not saying that you should be putting your hands on other kids. What I'm saying is my grandmother gave these people permission to discipline me because she believed in that community. You know what I never did again? I never walked down the street cursing again. It never happened because that just didn't happen. And then she had to talk to me. She had to talk with me. Or the people that, as I became a young adult and got into my career, that snatched me to the side and said, hey, man, this is how you do this. This is the mistakes that I made. This is how you do that job application. This is how you get through these classes. This is what you do. This is how I did it. Here are the mistakes that I made. Mentorship. Intergenerational mentorship. We should always be mentoring and always be being mentored. So school didn't do much for me, but the mentorship did. Then CBOs, community-based organizations. When I was at Lafayette Elementary School in West Oakland, I went to the Boys and Girls Club. I had a basketball coach at that place. There were people that made me do my homework at that place. There were folks that made sure that we were in school at that place. That if we were late, they were checking on our attendance. And if it was a lot of like tardies or absences, they were calling our parents. They were saying, do you need help? Do you need us to make sure you got a ride to school? We want to make sure that these things are happening. That wasn't the school doing that. That was a community-based organization doing that. I stayed at that place and they kept me off the street. I played basketball after I did my homework, and I stayed at that place till about 8 o'clock until I knew my parents was going to be home. Where are those organizations and how are we bringing those folks in now? And then finally, again, the black church, especially in black neighborhoods. You can say mosque, you can say church, you can say whatever you want to say. But that place held me accountable as well. This is your moral compass. This is the things that you should be doing. This is what we expect from you. This is what it means to be a young man. This is what it means to be this. This is what it means to be that. That church did a lot for my own necessary salvation, but also it had those other three things built into it, the education component, the mentorship component, you know what I'm saying, and then like the CBO component. It had those things there. Now we don't hold anybody accountable. We find one thing we don't like, we find a reason for us to lose, because right now it feels like as a people at times, we are happier and it's easier to just lose and be able to complain instead of stepping in and making sure we got the things we need to actually win. You know why? Because psychologically, man, it's kind of hard to be a winner because it breeds expectations. It's hard for professional teams to repeat as champions because they now have expectations. The Warriors snuck up on everybody that year. But the next year, they got everybody's best game. And they did well for the most part. But it's hard being a winner. I'm not saying nobody wants to be a winner. What I'm saying is, we've been able to complain for so long. For so long. You know what I mean? And it's like, and so I'm going to make sure I read the comments that people got. Bear with me. One comment said, leadership in the church is experiencing a season of malaise and unclear about how to motivate younger generations. Many need restructuring and reunification within. Walking up in a church in mass may not even be able to affect that. I disagree. Let me tell you why. Show up and do the work. A church should not be a marketing company. I don't need a church to market. I don't need a church to necessarily get on Snapchat and to understand young people. But if they want young people, go into the spaces where young people are and do work. Constant, consistent, good work. Do that. Like, I hear these conversations, and as somebody who's been involved with church, I was always one of the folks that was asked to, I come and I speak and do those things because we are trying to get those, like, young people involved and stuff, and I think that helps a little bit, but that's for the kids that's already in church. The reason why I remember that story about those Muslim brothers, I ain't never stepped foot in a mosque in my life. But I saw those jokers every day. Every day. And you know what they did? They commanded respect. You know what I'm saying? They commanded respect. And like they were out there. They were in uniform. Like they were like. And they showed that they cared about me. I didn't go Muslim. But my respect level for those men was high. I didn't talk back to those folks. And I did what I needed to do. You see what I'm saying? So I didn't see people from my church out there in the community doing that. That was my point. My boy Derek said, too much mismanagement of public funds for community organizations and projects. The execs collect a great portion of the money. Maybe. That could be totally true. I promise you, from rich people, there are other ways to get rich. Like, these people think that people going to schools and nonprofits to get rich. And maybe some do. It's not that wise of them because it's not that much money for it, to just be quite honest with you. But I hear that. What I'm saying is, when it's a public fund or if it's a community-based organization, you get to push them in different ways. I say this because I've helped run these organizations before. So, like last night, I came in, I have an agenda of the things I want to talk about. But if that community says, this is not what's helpful, this is what's helpful, and this is what we'll show up to talk about, then okay, all right, cool. I will make those adjustments because it doesn't do me any good to come and talk to an empty room. You see what I'm saying? I hope I didn't, the microphone. Sorry for those that just heard me hit the microphone. But you see what I'm saying? So I don't disagree with you. I think there's a lot of things that's happening, Derek. Like, I don't think you're wrong. But what I am trying to push is, we've been allowed to be victimized for a long time. And I'm not saying that there are some dang victim stuff that happens, all right? There's victimization that happens to us all the time. But at some point, we got to make a choice. At some point, we got to make a choice and say, either I'm going to keep complaining about how messed up things are, or this is what I'm going to do for me and for mine. And so I think that there are some very subtle differences just in my life with the people that I grew up with that have made those different choices. And I've seen folks that just kind of been okay with being, yo, this is just bad, it's always bad, and it's never going to get better, and just didn't try. That nihilism in the black community is a real thing. You know what I'm saying? But I've also seen some folks that's like, I don't care what it takes, I'm getting through this. I made so many mistakes in college, y'all. Y'all don't understand, man. I owe so much money. So much. But I said, listen, man, I'm not built to live the life that my parents built. It's not happening for me. So I'm going to do whatever it takes. I'm going to work that full-time job. I'm going to have that work-study job. I'm going to take those 20 units because I'm in these remedial classes, but I know if I'm here past 4 years, I'm not going to finish. So I got to do that. And I took classes in the summer. I took those loans. And yeah, I got some debt, man, but I also got to visit this place earlier this year that's behind me. You know what I'm saying? And like, I'm getting to live a life that nobody in my family has ever got to experience before. Yeah, I might be working till 12 or 1 o'clock at night, but that's because I choose to, not necessarily because I have to. You see what I'm saying? So, and I'm not on some Republican bootstrap stuff, man. I know that this stuff is messed up out here. You know what I'm saying? Like, I know that. I am a person who was raised on welfare. I'm a person that was raised on Social Security checks. I'm a person that spent those food stamps, man. Those things are important. They absolutely are. But I knew that I didn't want to be on that stuff when I got to be an adult. I knew that. I want to make sure it's available for people that need it. but that ain't gonna be my reality. And so those are the things that I kind of pushed on. So I had a good time last night, man. Also, I want to shout out, man, Podcast in Color. It's on Twitter. It's basically, I don't know if it's a person or if it's an organization, but basically they take black podcasts and they blow them up, and they found mine and I sent them the information, and they're starting to advertise for it, and that's awesome, man. I think that's dope. It's some other amazing black folk podcast on there that they highlight, so you should go check them out on Twitter. I tend to have more of my conversations on Twitter, but I try to respond to folks on Facebook as well. I'm not gonna keep y'all all night. I'm not gonna keep y'all super long, man. But what I do want to say, and where I want to kind of push us on, is at some point we got to be responsible for our communities and our babies, regardless of who messed it up. At some point, we got to just stop trying to look for who to blame and just say, you know what, damn it, it's my fault. And I'm about to hit the microphone again. It's my fault, but I'm about to fix it. Like, that's why I think that needs to happen. Nicole, you got to write that question out. It says, why do you think churches were extreme? It got cut off. I'll answer it, though, before I get off. If you rewrite it. I got something in my eye. But, yeah, I'm just going to be blinking real crazy. You know what I'm saying? I think that, yeah, man, things are bad. Things are messed up. You know what I'm saying? But, like, it don't matter if somebody gave you the needle to shoot that heroin in your arm. At some point, you're going to have to say, I don't like this feeling no more. Like, you can blame those people for the rest of your life, and it's a lot of junkies that die with needles in their arms. But it's also some people that was like, you know what? I got to make a change. So, yeah, man, they pump drugs in our communities. They take resources out of our communities. They do a lot of different things outside of our communities that affect us inside those communities. But at some point, there are some communities that say, damn, woe is me. And that community continues to deteriorate until there's nothing left. And then folks come in and buy it up, which is some stuff that we see in. And there are some communities that say, nah, man, forget that. We're going to take care of our own. This is what we're going to do. You got to make a choice. Period. I just know what I want for my life and what I want for my family's life. And if I ever have children, what I want for those folks' lives. And like, when I'm telling you about this education thing, it's something that I know because I see it, because I study it, because I'm in it, because I've seen the good, the highest of the high and the lowest of the lows. And it don't matter. It don't matter if that school is based in a poor community. It don't matter if those parents are poor. It has an impact. But what I'm saying is I have seen very poor, poor communities that have rallied together and ensured a different type of educational community for their children. I've seen it. I'm telling you, it's possible. I'm not trying to sell you on the land of milk and honey. I'm not trying to give you a Moses speech with the two tablets and I'm throwing them at you and breaking them. I'm just telling you that I've seen it. It's possible. So I like to build tools that help parents out. I will continue to keep building those tools. Thank you, Derek, for those kind words. Nicole, I really want to answer your question. I don't know if you saw it. I think you said, let me just see if I can figure out what the question might have been. Why do you think that churches were extremely disproportionate? I don't know what you're saying right there. But let me go back to the church then before I sign off. Grew up in church, had very faithful grandmother that was in church. My parents are very faithful to churches. I've given tons of money to churches. Well, not necessarily to churches. I believe in, you know, I give tithes, I do those things. But I think that if a church is in a community, I think that that community has a right to ask that church for help. I think it has a right to demand that that church offer help. And I don't care what the denomination is. I think that any business in your community, especially one that has nonprofit status, yeah, I think you should definitely ask them for help and demand it and tell them what that is. So, yeah, maybe they're like, okay, cool, we'll do a fundraiser or something for you. I don't know. You know, but I think that people with resources, let me tell you the difference, because I sit in these spaces. In my black community, which I love, and just growing up in black churches, it's a lot of singing, it's a lot of dance, it's a lot of joyful. Like, that church gives us hope. It makes us believe, you know, like, there are, that we are suffering now because the meek shall inherit the earth. I hear you. I'm not saying I'm against that. In communities with resources and people that have capital, social capital, economic capital, they ask for things. They ask for specific goals to be met, right? So when, and I told this to these parents, it makes sense that if when a school is failing that you are upset and you say, you are failing my baby, you, and they yelling and they going in on the teacher and like, my baby didn't deserve this grade and yada, right? And that's important. That's special. I think that needs to be heard and received. But you're not communicating. You're communicating the best way that you know how to, right? What I am saying is, when people with money and resources get mad, there are consequences. There are things that will happen if you don't do what we need you to do. Do you understand? So when a school that has rich people in it, when they don't like a teacher or a principal, they say, we need you to do this. This needs to change. And then if that doesn't happen, they go to the next level. And then they go to the next level. Then they organize at a different level. And that leader is not coming back. Like, there are communities that have shut churches down because they felt that that church was not serving their community. You see what I'm saying? Like, do you understand? And I think, and now I'm speaking to the folks that are running black churches. My parents are deep in, like, I've been a part of church leadership in some aspect before. My parents are a part of church leadership. I see a reverend on here who I know and respect and love as a brother. I know a lot of people on here that run churches that's listening right now. Thank you. I appreciate it. My message to you directly is, you struggling too. Your people are moving away. The black folks that grew up going to your church that used to live in Oakland now live in Antioch, and they now live in Stockton. And they might make that drive, but they're not going to make that drive forever. You are losing people. So how do you get more people? How do you continue to remain an asset in the community in which you are in? Staying inside the church building is not the answer for that. There's research on this. Like, I'm putting this stuff into my dissertation. Like, there's an article that talks about the decline of the black influence that the black church used to have. It is declining. We are still one of the most faithful bunches of people demographically, poor black people and poor Latino people. Some of the most fervently religious people in our country. And y'all are losing them in droves. But where are the partnerships? I don't see churches coming in and really organizing people the way that they used to. I don't. The last thing I saw from the black church was an embarrassment to me, was when they did a party for Donald Trump to try to give him a black pass. What I'm saying is, in this game of our people, like, there's blood on all of our hands. So we can spend this time blaming and talking about who did what and whatever the case is, or we can really figure out what we're going to do next. So you know what? Blame me. It's my fault. Blame me for the crack epidemic. Blame me for the bad schools. Blame me for the nonprofits that's not doing what they need to do. Blame me. I'll take the blame. Now let's talk about what we're going to do to make it better. It is Charles Levon Cole III's fault. All this stuff, the 700 kids that died in Chicago, the all the kids that's been getting killed in Oakland, it is my fault. I did it. May I burn for that. Now that we got that out the way of whose fault it is, now what we gonna do? Where you at? Because I have meetings around schools, and here's what we can do to improve this school, and this is what they need. And the district is going to do this, but I need the community to do this. And it's like pulling teeth. Or the conversations I have about the hospital here as a board member around what we need to do and around these community centers and how we need to like sustain those. And it's pulling teeth. But when something happens, then you say, I wasn't involved. Nobody told me about it. They making decisions without me. All of us or none of us. All them little cliche things. The only reason I can walk into those churches, those schools, those hospitals, and give these kind of talks and be honest with people is because the story that I come from, because I look like they kids, and because they see what's possible. I don't need to sell you a pipe dream of what's possible. I can tell you my story. And there are some of y'all that's on this thread that can tell me your, that can tell these kids your story, that can tell these communities your story. The reason why my parents' story blew up in 3.6 million is because they was two crackheads, man. You understand what I'm saying? Their marriage wasn't perfect. They went through stuff all over this country. And they flipped it and they turned it around. I'm sure they still struggling. I still struggle. Everybody still struggles. But it's something real. It's something that you can see. And y'all have that kind of life. Some of y'all do. Share that with people. Listen, man, just because it's a single mom or a kid ain't got their daddy at home, it's men on this right here. Take them kids out. They just need a man in their life. You ain't got to be a biological daddy. The sole reason I did not act up in school, I promise you, is because my daddy was bigger than me. I promise you. That's it. It ain't even, it's not because I was always smart, because I wanted to learn. I just didn't want to get in trouble because I couldn't beat him up. I promise you, if it was just my mama and there was no man involved, I guarantee you I would have been out there acting a fool. That's just me. I'm not talking for nobody else, but that's just me. I knew that there were real consequences. I don't need daddy. I don't need the men out there beating up people. But what I'm saying is that black men, you are so important to the things that are happening. You are so important to the things that are happening in our community. And I know we don't talk about manhood and womanhood no more because it's this PC 2017 or whatever the case is. But what's your purpose as a man? I've definitely failed as my purpose as a man a bunch of times. You know what I'm saying? But it's like you have such an impact without even having to put in a lot of effort. These streets need you. Period, man. Anyway, I had fun talking to y'all. I'm about to get back and do some more work. But I hope you all continue to check out the podcast. I will get this up soon as well. Go check out some of the other podcasts. If you want to have a conversation with me, you can do so. I'm a Twitter person, so you can find me on Twitter. Let me go down here. Let's see. There we go. Somebody said do it at the bottom. So I'll do it at the bottom. That's my Twitter. Have a conversation with me there. I will be in Atlanta at the end of the week giving some talks. I will be back for a few days and I will be flying out again to go do some more speaking. And then I have some stuff coming up north in Sacramento. So, Nicole, you said we should be talking about manhood and womanhood. Who said that wasn't PC? Oh, Nicole, I get dinged with this all the time. What I just said has been called misogynistic. I am pushing gender roles, a whole bunch of stuff, man. It is California in 2017, and I am a pretty progressive liberal person. I am, but that when I say stuff like that, people ding me as like the devil. So, but I do think that there's a role for manhood, and we need to have conversations about that and what that means. And I think that we've kind of failed there. So, at any rate, let's see. It was good talking to y'all, and I'm gonna get out of here for real this time. All right. If you like this, please share the video, but I need y'all to check out the podcast, okay? So if you have an iPhone, I would say check it out through iTunes. And if you are on SoundCloud, definitely check it out on SoundCloud. I pay for that just for you all. Leave comments in there. Share it. Share it on your social media. I promise you there will be more good things coming. The more support that I get from you all, the more things I'm allowed to do. And I will build this out to be a bigger platform. So with that being said, take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and happy birthday, one, to my father, whose birthday is going to be on the 15th, and also to the great Dr. Martin Luther King. Love you both. Have a good night. Peace.
Yeah. I don't want no picture with the president. I just want to talk to the man. Speak for the boys in a bando, and my nigga never walking again. Apologize if I'm harping again. I know these things happen often, but I'm back on the scene. I was lost in a dream as I write this to teen down in Austin. I've been building me a house back home in the South, ma. Won't believe what it's costing, and it's fit for a king, right? Or a nigga that can sing and explain all the pain that it cost him. My 16 should have came with a coffin for the fame and the fortune. Well, maybe not the fortune, but one thing is for sure, though, the fame is exhausting. That's why I moved away. I needed privacy, surrounded by the trees in Ivy League. Students that's recruited higher league, thinking you do you and I do me. Crib has got a big old back of yard. My niggas stand outside and pass cigars, filled with marijuana, laughing hard. Thankful that they friends are platinum star. In the driveway, there's no rapper cars, just some shit to get from back and forth. Just some shit to get from back and forth. Welcome to the shelter, this is pure. We'll help you if you felt too insecure to be the star you always knew you were. Wait, I think police is at the door.
Okay, the neighbors think I'm selling dope. I guess the neighbors think I'm selling dope. Selling dope. Neighbors think I'm selling dope.